the reading audio for Odyssey, books 1, 2, and 4, excerpts. Book 1. Tell me, O Muse, of that ingenious hero who traveled far and wide after he had sacked the famous town of Troy. Many cities did he visit, and many were the nations with whose manners and customs he was acquainted. Moreover, he suffered much upon the sea while trying to save his own life and bring his men safely home. Do what he might, he could not save his men, for they perished through their own folly in eating the cattle of the sun god Hyperion. So the god prevented them from ever reaching home. Tell me, too, about all these things, O daughter of Zeus, from whatsoever source you may know them. All who escaped death in battle or by shipwreck had got safely home except Odysseus, and he, though he was longing to return to his wife and country, was detained by the goddess Calypso, who wanted to marry him. But as years went by, there came a time when the gods settled that he should go back to Ithaca. Even when he was among his own people, his troubles would not yet be over. Nevertheless, all the gods had now begun to pity him, except Poseidon, who still persecuted him without ceasing, and would not let him get home. In the remainder of Book 1, we are introduced to the son of Odysseus, Telemachus. He awaits the return of his father, whom he has never met. In his father's absence, a group of suitors have taken over his home, hoping for the hand of Penelope, Odysseus' wife, in marriage. She has avoided choosing one, but in the meantime, the suitors are spending their time feasting and wasting away the goods of her household. Telemachus is coming of age, which means he is a threat to the suitors, who wish to marry his mother and become king. After prompting from a goddess, Telemachus decides to go abroad in search of information about his father. Before making this move, he calls an assembly and addresses the suitors. This represents the first phase of a quest. We should recall what the important skills are for a hero to understand this beginning. And these skills are speaking and fighting. So just as much as this story is the story of Odysseus' quest to return home, it is also the story of Telemachus' quest to become a man and take up his place in society. So we should read with that, or perhaps these quests, in mind. Book 2. Now when the child of morning, rosy-fingered dawn, appeared, Telemachus rose and dressed himself. He bound his sandals onto his comely feet, tied his sword about his shoulder, and left his room looking like an immortal god. He at once sent the criers round to call the people to an assembly. So they called them, and the people gathered. Then, when they were got together, he went to the place of assembly, spear in hand, not alone, for his two hounds went with him. Athena endowed him with a presence of such divine comeliness that all marveled at him as he went by, and when he took his place on his father's seat, even the oldest counselors made way for him. Aegyptius, a man bent double with age and of infinite experience, was the first to speak. His son, Antiphus, had gone with Odysseus to Troy. "Man of Ithaca," he said, "hear my words. From the day Odysseus left us, there has been no meeting of our counselors until now. Who then can it be, whether old or young, that finds it so necessary to convene us? Has he got wind of some host approaching? Does he wish to warn us? Or would he speak upon some other matter of public moment? I am sure he is an excellent person, and I hope Zeus will grant him his heart's desire." Telemachus took this speech as a good omen, and rose at once, for he was bursting with what he had to say. He stood in the middle of the assembly, and the good herald Pisenor brought him his staff. Then, turning to Aegyptius, "Sir," said he, "it is I, as you will shortly learn, who have convened you, for it is I who am the most aggrieved. I have not got wind of any host approaching, about which I would warn you. Nor is there any matter of public moment on which I would speak. My grievance is purely personal, and turns on two great misfortunes which have fallen upon my house. The first of these is the loss of my excellent father, who was chief among all you here present, and was like a father to every one of you. The second is much more serious, and before long will be the utter ruin of my estate. The sons of all the chief men among you are pestering my mother to marry them against her will. They are afraid to go to her father Icarius, asking him to choose the one he likes best, and to provide marriage gifts for his daughter, but day by day they keep hanging about my father's house, sacrificing our oxen, sheep, and fat goats for their banquets, and never giving so much as a thought to the quantity of wine they drink. No estate can stand up such can stand such recklessness. We have now no Odysseus to ward off harm from our doors, and I cannot hold my own against them. I shall never all my days be as good a man as he was. Still, I would indeed defend myself if I had power to do so, for I cannot stand such treatment any longer. My house is being disgraced and ruined. Have respect, therefore, to your own consciences and to public opinion. Fear, too, the wrath of heaven, lest the gods should be displeased and turn upon you. I pray you by Zeus and Themis, who is the beginning and the end of counsels, do not hold back, my friends, and leave me single-handed, unless it be that my brave father Odysseus did some wrong to the Achaeans, which you would now avenge on me by aiding and abetting these suitors. Moreover, if I am to be eaten out of house and home at all, I had rather you did the eating yourselves, for I could then take action against you to some purpose, and serve you with notices from house to house till I got paid in full, whereas now I have no remedy. Later, Telemachus goes on to outline his plan to go abroad in search of some word of his father. In his travels, Telemachus first visits Nestor, whom we met in the Iliad. Nestor sends him to see Menelaus, now at home in Sparta with his wife Helen. We pick things up in Book 4, where Telemachus has just arrived at the home of Menelaus and Helen. They reached the low-lying city of Lacedaemon, where they drove straight to the abode of Menelaus. They found him in his own house, feasting with his many clansmen in honor of the wedding of his son, and also of his daughter, whom he was marrying to the son of that valiant warrior, Achilles. He had given his consent and promised her to him while he was still at Troy. And now the gods were bringing the marriage about. So he was sending her with chariots and horses to the city of the Myrmidons, over whom Achilles' son was reigning. For his only son, he had found a bride from Sparta, daughter of Alector. So the neighbors and kinsmen of Menelaus were feasting and making merry in his house. There was a bard also to sing to them and play his lyre, while two tumblers went about, performing in the midst of them, when the man struck up with his tune. Telemachus and the son of Nestor stayed their horses at the gate, whereon Hetaonius, servant to Menelaus, came out, and as soon as he saw them, ran hurrying back into the house to tell his master. He went close up to him and said, "Menelaus, there are some strangers come here, two men, who look like sons of Zeus. What are we to do? Shall we take their horses out, or tell them to find friends elsewhere as best they can?" Menelaus was very angry and said, "Hetaonius, son of Boethos, you never used to be a fool, but now you talk like a simpleton. Take their horses out, of course, and show the strangers in, that they may have supper. You and I have stayed often enough at other people's houses before we got back here, where heaven grant that we may rest in peace henceforward." So Hetaonius bustled back and bade other servants come with him. They took their sweating horses from under the yoke, made them fast to the mangers, and gave them a feed of oats and barley mixed. Then they leaned the chariot against the end wall of the courtyard and led the way into the house. Telemachus and Pisistratus were astonished when they saw it, for its splendor was that of the sun and moon. When they had admired everything to their heart's content, they went into the bath and washed themselves. The servants brought them woolen cloaks and shirts, and the two took their seats by the side of Menelaus. A maidservant brought them water in a beautiful golden ewer, and poured it into a silver basin for them to wash their hands, and she drew a clean table beside them. Another servant brought them bread, and offered them many good things of what there was in the house, while the carver fetched them plates of all manner of meats, and set cups of gold by their side. Menelaus then greeted them, saying, "Fall to, and welcome. When you have done supper, I shall ask who you are, for the lineage of such men as you cannot have been lost. You must be descended from a line of scepter-bearing kings, for poor people do not have such sons as you are." He then handed them a piece of fat roast loin, which had been set near him as being a prime part, and they laid their hands on the good things that were before them. As soon as they had had enough to eat and drink, Telemachus said to the son of Nestor, with his head so close that no one might hear, "Look, Pisistratus, man after my own heart, see the gleam of bronze and gold, of amber, ivory, and silver? Everything is so splendid that it is like seeing the palace of Olympian Zeus. I am lost in admiration." Menelaus overheard him and said, "No one, my sons, can hold his own with Zeus, for his house and everything about him is immortal. Among mortal men, well, there may be another who has as much wealth as I have, or there may not. But at all events, I have traveled much and have undergone much hardship, for it was nearly 8 years before I could get home with my fleet. I went to Cyprus, Phoenicia, and the Egyptians. I went also to the Ethiopians, the Sidonians, and the Rembians, and to Libya, where the lambs have horns as soon as they are born, and the sheep lamb down 3 times a year. Everyone in that country, whether master or man, has plenty of cheese, meat, and good milk, for the ewes yield all the year round. But while I was traveling and getting great riches among these people, my brother was secretly and shockingly murdered through the perfidy of his wicked wife, so that I have no pleasure in being lord of all this wealth. Whoever your parents may be, they must have told you about all this. Would that I had only a third of what I now have, so that I had stayed at home, and all those were living who perished on the plain of Troy, far from Argos. I grieve, as I sit here in my house, for one and all of them. At times I cry aloud for sorrow, but presently I leave off again, for crying is cold comfort, and one soon tires of it. Yet grieve for these as I may, I do so for one man more than for them all. I cannot even think of him without loathing both food and sleep, so miserable does he make me. For no one of all the Achaeans worked so hard, or risked so much as he did. He took nothing by it, and has left a legacy of sorrow to himself, for he has been gone a long time, and we know not whether he is alive or dead. His old father, his long-suffering wife Penelope, and his son Telemachus, whom he left behind him, an infant in arms, are plunged in grief on his account." Thus spoke Menelaus, and the heart of Telemachus yearned as he bethought him of his father. Tears fell from his eyes as he heard him thus mentioned, so that he held his cloak before his face with both hands. When Menelaus saw this, he doubted whether to let him choose his own time for speaking, or to ask him at once and find what it was all about. While he was thus in two minds, Helen came down from her high-vaulted and perfumed room, looking as lovely as Artemis herself. Adraste brought her a seat, Alcippe a soft woolen rug, while Philo fetched her the silver workbox which Alcandra, wife of Polybus, had given her. Polybus lived in Egyptian Thebes, which is the richest city in the whole world. He gave Menelaus two baths, both of pure silver, two tripods, and 10 talents of gold. Besides all this, his wife gave Helen some beautiful presents, to wit, a golden distaff and a silver workbox that ran on wheels with a gold band round the top of it. Philo now placed this by her side, full of fine spun yarn, and a distaff charged with violet-colored wool was laid upon the top of it. Then Helen took her seat, put her feet upon the footstool, and began to question her husband. "Do we know, Menelaus," said she, "the names of these strangers who have come to visit us? Shall I guess right or wrong? But I cannot help saying what I think. Never yet have I seen either man or woman so like somebody else. Indeed, when I look at him, I hardly know what to think." "As this young man is like Telemachus, whom Odysseus left as a baby behind him, when you Achaeans went to Troy with battle in your hearts, on account of my most shameless self." "My dear wife," replied Menelaus, "I see the likeness just as you do. His hands and feet are just like Odysseus, so is his hair and the shape of his head and the expression of his eyes. Moreover, when I was talking about Odysseus and saying how much he had suffered on my account, tears fell from his eyes, and he hid his face in his mantle." Then Pisistratus said, "Menelaus, son of Atreus, you are right in thinking that this young man is Telemachus, but he is very modest, and is ashamed to come here and begin opening up discourse with one whose conversation is so divinely interesting as your own. My father Nestor sent me to escort him hither, for he wanted to know whether you could give him any counsel or suggestion. A son has always trouble at home when his father has gone away leaving him without supporters, and this is how Telemachus is now placed, for his father is absent, and there is no one among his own people to stand by him." "Bless my heart," replied Menelaus, "then I am receiving a visit from the son of a dear friend, who suffered much hardship for my sake. I had always hoped to entertain him with most marked distinction when heaven had granted us a safe return from beyond the seas. I should have founded a city for him in Argos and built him a house. I should have made him leave Ithaca with his goods, his son, and all his people, and should have sacked them for some one of the neighboring cities that is subject to me. We should thus have seen one another continually, and nothing but death would have interrupted so close and happy an intercourse. I suppose, however, that heaven grudged us such great good fortune, for it has prevented the poor fellow from ever getting home at all." Thus did he speak, and his words set them all a-weeping. Helen wept, Telemachus wept, and so did Menelaus. Nor could Pisistratus keep his eyes from filling when he remembered his dear brother, Antilochus, whom the son of Bright Dawn had killed. Thereon he said to Menelaus, "Sir, my father Nestor, when we used to talk about you at home, told me you were a person of rare and excellent understanding. If then it be possible, do as I would urge you. I am not fond of crying while I am getting my supper. Morning will come in due course, and in the forenoon I care not how much I cry for those that are dead and gone. This is all we can do for the poor things. We can only shave our heads for them and wring the tears from our cheeks. I had a brother who died at Troy. He was by no means the worst man there. You are sure to have known him. His name was Antilochus. I never set eyes upon him myself, but they say that he was singularly fleet of foot and in fight valiant. Your discretion, my friend," answered Menelaus, "is beyond your years. It is plain you take after your father. One can soon see when a man is son to one whom heaven has blessed both as regards wife and offspring, and it has blessed Nestor from first to last all his days, giving him a great old age in his own house, with sons about him who are both well disposed and valiant. We will put an end, therefore, to all this weeping, and attend to our supper again. Let water be poured over our hands. Telemachus and I can talk with one another fully in the morning. At this, Asphalion, one of the servants, poured water over their hands, and they laid their hands on the good things that were before them. Then Zeus's daughter, Helen, bethought her of another matter. She drugged the wine with an herb that banishes all care, sorrow, and ill humor. Whoever drinks wine thus drugged cannot shed a single tear all the rest of the day, not even though his father and mother, both of them, drop down dead, or he sees a brother or a son hewn in pieces before his very eyes. This drug of such sovereign power and virtue had been given to Helen by Polydamna, wife of Thon, a woman of Egypt, where there grew all sorts of herbs, some good to put into the mixing bowl and others poisonous. Moreover, everyone in the whole country is a skilled physician, for they are of the race of Paeon. When Helen had put this drug in the bowl and had told the servants to serve the wine around, she said, Menelaus, son of Atreus, and you, my good friends, sons of honorable men, which is as Zeus wills, for he is the giver both of good and evil, and can do what he chooses. Feast here as you will, and listen while I tell you a tale in season. I cannot indeed name every single one of the exploits of Odysseus, but I can say what he did when he was before Troy, and you Achaeans were in all sorts of difficulties. He covered himself with wounds and bruises, dressed himself all in rags, and entered the enemy's city, looking like a beggar. In this disguise he entered the city of Troy, and no one said anything to him. I alone recognized him. Excuse me. I alone recognized him, and began to question him, but he was too cunning for me. When, however, I had washed and anointed him, and had given him clothes, and after I had sworn a solemn oath not to betray him to the Trojans till he had got safely back to his own camp and to the ships, he told me all that the Achaeans meant to do. He killed many Trojans, got much information before he reached the Argive camp. For all which things the Trojan women made lamentation. But for my own part, I was glad. My heart was beginning to wander to my home, and I was unhappy about the wrong that Aphrodite had done me in taking me over there, away from my country, my daughter, and my lawful wedded husband, who is indeed by no means deficient either in person or understanding. Then Menelaus said, All that you have been saying, my dear wife, is true. I have traveled much and have had much to do with heroes, but I have never seen such another man as Odysseus. What endurance, too, and what courage he displayed within the wooden horse, wherein all the bravest of the Argives were lying in wait to bring death and destruction upon the Trojans. How sad, exclaimed Telemachus, that all this was of no avail to save him, nor yet his own iron courage. But now, sir, be pleased to send us all to bed, that we may lie down and enjoy the blessed boon of sleep. At this, Helen told the maidservants to set beds in the room that was in the gatehouse, and make them with good red rugs, and spread coverlets on the top of them with woolen cloaks for the guests to wear. So the maids went out, carrying a torch, and made the beds, to which a manservant presently conducted the strangers. Thus, then, did Telemachus and Pisistratus sleep there in the forecourt, while the son of Atreus lay in an inner room with lovely Helen by his side.